With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Breeding may boost machine harvest for peaches. With the rising cost of labor and a shortage of skilled workers to hand-pick fruit, California canning peach growers are looking to science for solutions. They're breeding new varieties that are firm and flavorful and could lead to greater adoption of mechanization at harvest. Thomas Gradziel, a geneticist at University of California, Davis, says new varieties are essential to make peach farming economically sustainable. For more than 30 years, growers have funded breeding by Gradziel to develop new and improved clingstone peach varieties. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. Proposed indoor heat regulation. Heat illness prevention standards for indoors are currently being crafted, and Angelina Seha of AgSafe shares a few focal points of the proposed rule.
A couple of the items that I think are of note or of interest where definitely employers need to chime in is there is an 82-degree cooling area that needs to be set up. And I know for some of our agricultural operations, it's going to be extremely difficult to have separate space where especially a temperature control 82-degree area. There's also some of it I know is around personal protective equipment, individuals wearing personal protective equipment. Are areas that are already hot to begin with. But we think about in agriculture, there's some of the processing facilities, et cetera. But if I just think about farming ag, we've got shop, we've got other areas that are indoors, but not quite indoors, but definitely not in office, right, where I've got a temperature control.
Seha adds.
And even offices, right? It might be someone's converted house or a mobile unit. So I think it's just really being mindful about what other spaces possibly, again, where we have workers working that could conceivably fall under the standard. Those unintended, sometimes we think about these big factories or it doesn't really affect me. We're in ag. But I know processors are, concerned definitely. And so just thinking about how it can affect you. Now, some of the other pieces I have read sound very similar to the outdoor heat standard with the written procedures and training and some of those other requirements sound very much in line with kind of how the indoor heat standard is laid out. However, some of the pieces, especially with the temperature, are exact temperatures, right? It has to be at 82 degrees, right? Is sometimes hard to. How do you manage, right? Ensuring that happens in a space that maybe needs to then be retrofitted for that, right? I don't know. I think it's definitely coming.
And now here's Brian German with more Ag News.
Wine grape buyers may be reluctant to take a chance on speculative activity. President of Allied Grape Growers, Jeff Bitter, described the impact that inflation and other consumer trends are having on demand from wine grape buyers.
Buying grapes that they don't already have a defined program for or a home for, regardless of how cheap those grapes might get, regardless of the fact that the market might be soft and there might be good deals, historically speaking. But the reality is there's probably more fear around being long on inventory than there is around a missed opportunity to capture, a market or market share. Most grape buyers will err towards playing it safe in this environment and being conservative and not going out and spending the extra dollars to buy the available grapes.
The week of July 24th will be the last week of the Sutter Yuba Ag Venture Day Camp. Cooperative Extension Farm Advisor Whitney Brim DeForest provided some of the details for the first ever camp.
It's for kids from ages 6 to 12, and we are offering it to basically everyone that lives in Sutter and Yuba counties. So the camp this year was funded through a grant. The center at Sierra Health Foundation provided all the funding for us this year to be able to offer it. And the purpose of the camp is to expose kids in our area to agriculture and natural resources, especially those that are available in the surrounding communities. And there's still openings, and so they need to go to our website, which is cesutter.ucanr.edu, or they can just call our office at 530-822-7515.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
GMOs? Genetically engineered? Bioengineered? What's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. And you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages to let you know the product or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, officials with the United Nations say a number of ideas are being floated to get Ukrainian and Russian grain flowing to global markets after Moscow quit a deal allowing the safe export of Ukraine grain through the Black Sea. Now, international analysts say it's key to watch whether Russia weaponizes its wheat exports. Jeff McPike is a market analyst based in Superior, Colorado.
Look, I would not be surprised if Russia, and I said this over a year ago, and was proven wrong until now, that Russia uses wheat as a weapon and gives preferential pricing to certain countries that it wants to support and needs the support from, whether it's Algeria, Egypt, Tunisia. I don't know. I would suspect that it will use price to reward people for not condemning them for their attacks on Ukrainian ports, et cetera.
But given the overall world wheat stock situation, McPike downplays the implications of the Black Sea grain deal suspension on global hunger.
Russia wheat exports are forecast by the WASD to be at record levels this coming year. Record levels, this was before, this came out before the suspension of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, which doesn't necessarily impact Russia that much unless things change quickly. Ukrainian exports, a lot of talk about this, about how the Russians are using the Black Sea corridor and the suspension to starve the world. That's, you know, kind of bullshit, but you have to expect it. We've seen the EU take the lion's share of Ukrainian wheat. Turkey also taking a much bigger share than it used to. Okay, Egypt, a smaller share because they've been relying on Russia and Russian pricing. So the whole argument that Ukrainian exports after the corridor or during the corridor should have flown to Somalia and Kenya and everything is really an ignorant argument. The fact that Ukrainian exports float to the market allowed prices to stay lower than they might otherwise have been and benefited all countries, including the ones that are, you know, starving, if you want to call it that, or who need it more, who have food insecurities. So this whole argument that has to go to those destinations specifically, Ukrainian wheat has to go to Somalia or Tanzania or Bangladesh or whatever, it's not an accurate or intelligent discussion. It's more to inflame people's passions.
McPike was a guest during a market update webinar hosted by the Northern Crops Institute on Wednesday. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says Ukraine's farmers have suffered $3.9 billion in losses since Russia invaded in February of 2022. Meanwhile, one day after Russia terminated the Black Sea Grain Initiative, the country attacked Ukraine grain facilities at the Odessa port. Russia terminated the deal following an attack by Ukraine on a bridge. The port attacks were in retaliation to the Ukraine attack. The Black Sea grain export deal allowed for safe transport of grain through the Black Sea by Ukraine. Reuters reports that any attempt to reopen Ukrainian grain shipments without Russia's participation would depend on insurance companies agreeing to provide coverage. Russia could return to the grain deal, but only if its demands are met for rules to be eased for its own exports of food and fertilizer. The country, for now, has not guaranteed the safety of ships in the Black Sea carrying products from Ukraine. That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, U.S. red meat exporters recently connected with some prospective customers at the U.S. Meat Export Federation's Latin American Product Showcase. Joe Sheely has more details.
The U.S. Meat Export Federation has just completed its Latin American Product Showcase in Cartagena, Colombia, where U.S. companies connected with 220 importers from throughout Central and South America and the Caribbean. One of those importers was Laura Di Bado with the Colombian company Vitamar.
We distribute in the Colombian market pork, beef, and some other frozen products. We are a family company in Colombia for 45 years. And this show is very important for us because we can find new suppliers. We can meet all the people that are involved in this sector. So it's very important to be here. We try to go to the fairs in some other countries, but to be here in Colombia, that is my country, my market, it's an advantage for me and my company. We are looking to have more brands of beef and pork to complete our portfolio for food service. Price and quality, and it's very difficult to find that, but I think in the U.S. you can find quality and price.
U.S. industry leaders also attended the showcase and saw marketing activities for U.S. red meat in Colombia. The group included Minnesota farmer and USMEF chair-elect Randy Spronk.
My first Latin America showcase was in Panama. I actually saw another one in Dominican Republic, and it's just phenomenal seeing the growth that's happening and the impact that has when we're in these countries. We actually had an industry tour that we had from corn growers and soybean growers, pork producers, beef producers, and we saw frozen pork sirloins being processed to be brought to grocery stores, which is great to see these sirloins being marketed. We just had a great taste testing of different cuisines within Colombian Cartagena here that we really enjoyed to show how our products that are born, raised, and processed in the United States, how they're actually enjoyed in foreign countries. And just great for those that fund USMEF to be able to see what those funds actually do and show the return on the dollar and return on their investment.
For more, please visit USMEF.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And U.S. cattle producers will gather in San Diego July 24th through 26th for the industry's summer business meeting to discuss critical issues. They'll also be developing initiatives and establish direction for various projects aimed at improving the beef cattle industry. One of the highlights of the event is the educational session, Optimizing Resources and Leveraging Technology to Build Resilience. It'll provide leaders with a glimpse into the building resilience. Now, the session will feature Dr. James Olchin, Cooperative Extension Animal Management System Specialist at the University of California, Davis. Be looking at the most recent research on water use in U.S. beef production. NCBA Senior Director of Sustainability, Samantha Worth, will moderate a panel discussion focused on the tools and technologies available to help producers optimize water resources and grazing management. To learn more about the Cattle Industry Summer Business Meeting, go to ncba.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
We want everyone to breathe clean, healthy air, but California's traffic and mountains don't make it easy. Our mountains trap pollution, making us more vulnerable to dirty air. Today's farmers are voluntarily doing their part with help from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. How? By replacing older diesel-powered tractors and equipment, treating dusty farm roads, avoiding open burning, and more. Can't afford it? NRCS has invested $178 million helping California farmers clean our air. They can help you too. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Lawmakers introduced the Women in Agriculture Bill. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. Lawmakers recently introduced the Women in Agriculture Act. The legislation would establish a research priority for agriculture machinery and equipment designed to be used by women, and also create funding set aside for childcare facilities in rural areas. The bill also creates a Women Farmers and Ranchers Liaison position at the Department of Agriculture. Although the number of women in the agriculture industry is growing, the majority of tools are designed and manufactured to the height, strength, and body type of a man. Representative Shelley Pingree, a Democrat from Maine, led the introduction of the bill. She says the Women in Agriculture Act provides resources specifically for women farmers and ranchers to level the playing field and work toward a fairer agricultural industry. In 2019, women accounted for 26% of the farm labor workforce, a 19% increase since 2009. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCowan. Boundary issues often arise in rural settings. What controls when a survey doesn't match an existing fence line? How is the actual legal property boundary determined? It's an issue that arises more than you might think. Landowners generally consider existing fences to be the boundary between adjacent properties. But the law may view things differently. The actual boundary is an imaginary line that can be found by examining the deeds to the adjacent properties. An existing fence line is merely evidence of where the boundary line between the properties is located. It's also immaterial whether the fence is a permanent fence or not. However, what happens when the fence line has become part of the property description over time as the land changed hands? In that situation, the fence line may be considered as the legal property boundary. That's even the case if a parcel is described by mapping out the survey lines and the existing fence is not on the surveyed boundary. Instead, the adjacent owners may have treated that old fence as the boundary. This actually occurs frequently in rural settings, and when it does, the old fence can be substituted for the actual legal boundary under the doctrine of practical location. Once that fence has been used as the boundary for a set period of time defined by state law, it can become the legal boundary by filing an action to quiet title. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCowan.
It is official, according to USDA meteorologist Mark Brusberg.
Climate Prediction Center has declared that we are in an El Nino because it's expected to last at least 6 months. There is a lot of warm, anomalously warm ocean water below the surface, and they're starting to see the wind shift over the Pacific, which is a good signal that the atmosphere is starting to react to what's going on in the Pacific ocean waters.
El Nino is expected to result in warmer, drier conditions and along our nation's southern tier, potential active storm tracks, resulting in possible impacts to U.S. crops. Yet how does this weather phenomenon impact ag in other parts of the globe? Brusberg looks at the southern hemisphere.
The last 3 years of La Nina resulted in drought in Argentina. Parts of Brazil were impacted by the La Nina. Other parts were not. We saw bumper wheat crops 3 years in a row in Australia.
So once El Nino becomes established in the southern hemisphere,
we are anticipating a rebound in South American grain and oilseed production, most notably in Argentina, possibly in Paraguay and southern parts of Brazil. We're not anticipating another bumper crop in Australia this year.
In other parts of the southern half of the world,
we're also looking at a possible drier season in southern Africa. South Africa has had some bumper corn crops. If they were to have a poor crop, that would not only impact them, but their neighbors. They're one of the major producers of corn for the entire southern African region. And then farther north, we're watching to see how other parts of Africa respond to the El Nino, because we're always keen to keep an eye out for any potential humanitarian crises we could see if there's drought in parts of the world that are already struggling.
Brusberg adds that El Nino impacts U.S. agriculture not just directly, but indirectly as well, via production or lack of by other nations.
A possible bumper crop in Argentina or just South America in general is ultimately going to impact our farmers as well.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Taking another swing at the SWAT Act. U.S. Senator Gary Peters of Michigan is taking another swing at the SWAT Act. Peters, along with Senators Mike Braun of Indiana, Susan Collins of Maine, and Jeff Merkley of Oregon, reintroduced the bipartisan Spotted Wing Abatement Trust Act, which would reduce the spread of spotted wing Drosophila, also known as SWD. The act would also advance research on this invasive insect that is hurting fruit growers and their crops across the country.
It's about the economy, it's about jobs, and it's important for us to make sure that we're dealing with an invasive pest that is causing tremendous challenges. In fact, I think some of the numbers I've seen is in a year, over $700 million of economic impact as a result, not just of blueberries, but cherries and other specialty crops that get hit.
Senator Peters plans to push for the bill to be included in the 2023 Farm Bill. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Why do you listen?
I typically listen here at work
from my desk on my way to work in the morning. When we wake up, it goes on the radio.
I can hear a song and be instantly transported back to a time in my life that I enjoy remembering.
I think that's what I like listening to radio for, is just to stay informed on whether it's news, sports, new music, anything.
Why do you listen? Go to whyilisten.com, tell us why you listen, and you have a chance to win $500. Visit whyilisten.com today.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Market bulls have control of this grain trade for now, but be careful from here, especially in soybeans. I'm Mark Oppold with your Bottom Line Report this Thursday, brought to you by Helena Agri. Just a month ago today, December corn was peaking near that 630 level. We see more and more analysts joining what we've been saying. Rain makes grain scenario may not work this year. We think crop scouts are going to see shorter ears when they get in the fields and some early tip back as well and weak stalks. December can get back toward that $6 level by harvest, but it won't be a straight shot up in our view. Be careful for pullbacks. Now, November soybeans, on the other hand, may be hitting a top as the rain makes grain scenario could work there. Watch that action today above 1430 should we move above that level. This is the Bottom Line Report. Keep an eye on Wall Street here today and the week ahead. Stocks have been on a 7 to 8 day run, the longest streak in over 2 years. Fed meeting coming next Tuesday, Wednesday could break that string. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
In a recent survey conducted by Brevant Seeds, 73% of the 284 U.S. ag retail respondents ranked drought toughness as the number one crop challenge this season. With drought plaguing many areas, retailers are on high alert to help their farmer customers overcome anticipated weed and disease obstacles. Ashley Berghold, Area Business Development Manager for the Brevant Seeds brand, says protecting yield potential is a priority for the current crop stage.
So now is the time to focus on what you can control. To preserve yield potential against drought's adverse effects. For many corn and soybean farmers, it's critical to prioritize post-emergent herbicide and fungicide applications to manage late-season yield robbers.
According to the survey, retailers are excited about trying new products, attending field days, and using new technology this season. However, 80% of respondents are most looking forward to helping customers achieve their yield goals despite tough growing conditions. The first step to propelling crops to harvest starts with seed decisions. Tyler Schultes, business unit leader at Landis, recommends selecting products with locally proven agronomic and yield performance.
With retailers offering so many brands, it is easy but not ideal to generate a one-size-fits-all approach to seed decisions. Brevant Seeds does a great job zeroing in on each specific area. Whether I have a location in northern or southern Iowa, the Brevant Seeds team really works alongside our team to identify the best fit for the farmers in their individual acres.
Another priority is herbicide strategies. In this survey, retailers noted that managing diseases and weeds is among the top three most influential topics they discuss with customers during the growing season.
Our retailers offer a deep pool of resources at the farm gate to mitigate weed and disease pressure. Really, from day one at planting, farmers rely on their retailers for whole acre solutions, from advice on seed and crop protection, even to custom application and digital services.
Finally, tar spot is a growing concern as it spreads across the Corn Belt. More than one quarter of retailers report tar spot is the most prevalent agronomy issue of the year. Fungicide applications can help farmers manage tar spot to protect yield potential. Fortunately, farmers have their retailer and the Brevant Seeds team to help select corn hybrids with genetic resistance and plan for in-season management.
Not only does Brevant Seeds want to partner with us as the retailer, they also put the time in to understand the grower and truly partner with the grower as well.
For more information about managing weeds, diseases, and seed choices, visit Brevant.com. Michael Clements reporting.
Classic comedian W.C. Fields once said,
"You can't cheat an honest man."
But he was wrong on that one. Thousands of honest Americans are cheated every month just from telemarketing scams or scams coming through emails or texts or fraudulent websites. Fraud reports and complaints are usually handled at the federal level by the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and indeed
65% of the complaints to the FTC relate to telemarketing calls.
But Kansas State University Extension expert Barbara Stockbrandt says scammers are increasingly using digital means as well, all kinds of approaches and pitches, all designed to either get our personal financial information or, more commonly, just to get us to send them money. The types of scams are endless. Here's just a couple of examples.
Someone calling from Social Security, needing your personal information or confirming that. Or the IRS with threats of arrest, possibly, if outstanding taxes aren't paid.
Or the call or email can be from a fake charity asking us to contribute immediately. Immediately, because the situation is desperate. That uses our charitable side to get at our money. But Barbara says one way to spot a scam is that they want money now. So Barbara says it may seem rude, but either one.
Don't answer calls from unfamiliar numbers.
Or two, if you do answer and you smell a rat.
Just say no thanks and hang up.
Whatever you do.
Never send money.
Or give out your personal information. Now, online scams are quite sophisticated, especially those from supposed charities.
They create organization names that sound similar to an official legitimate charity trying to catch their targets off guard.
So we may get unsolicited emails, not just from fake charities, but other fake entities, and there are ways to not get taken in by those. First,
if they are wanting a reply to an email, look to see if the reply is returned to a personal email address, such as Gmail or Hotmail. If so, it's probably a scam.
Look for bad grammar and misspellings in the email. That's a sign the email's not coming from this country and is likely a scam. Also,
sometimes in an email, there's a link included for you to click on, requesting you to go to their site. So use your cursor to hover over the link, but don't click on the link.
The emails also may have attachments they want you to open up.
Don't click on those either, because those can install software where the scammer may be able to gain access to your computer and then maybe through your computer to other possible computers of friends and family.
Just leave that email alone, even if it looks like it comes from a legitimate business or charity, because scammers will copy or steal logos and such from legitimate entities to lure us in. And of course, remember, whatever the deal is, there's one final familiar piece of advice for just about any deal anywhere.
If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Yes, because those scammers follow another saying from W.C. Fields.
Never give a sucker an even break or smarten up a chump.
That's right. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water. Your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
In this week's almond update from the Almond Board of California, four FFA members that received scholarships from the funding raised by the Almond Leadership Program were featured on a recent episode of the Almond Journey podcast, where podcast host Tim Hamrich spoke to them about their experiences and goals within agriculture.
Next, we're going to go from someone who didn't grow up around farming to someone who decided pretty early on that he wanted to be a pest control advisor, or PCA, from riding around in a pickup truck with his grandfather. Brendan Elzey is from Hanford, California, and both of his parents were Hanford FFA members, so he knew he wanted to follow in their footsteps to learn more about agriculture, which he already had a passion for. What he didn't anticipate was how much he'd get out of the leadership aspects of the organization. The combination of these experiences influenced and reinforced his decision to go to College of the Sequoias and eventually to transfer to Fresno State to become a PCA himself in the future.
I grew up in a family that my grandpa, he worked his whole life really as a PCA, and I was fortunate enough to, at that younger age, be able to ride around in the passenger seat of his pickup truck and go to all the different sites where he was working with growers on what they were trying to accomplish. And, you know, if I heard that, you know, in a week, like, oh, I'd get a day where I get to go ride around with grandpa, that was, I'd look forward to that for a week. And then from there, I couldn't wait till the next time. And starting out, you know, I really didn't know why I looked forward to it so much. Maybe it was to be around grandpa. Maybe it was the machinery and the equipment. You know, I'd get to go to all these different farms and get to see all the different equipment and stuff. And being a little kid running around, that was always one of the coolest things to be around. But from there, I always knew that this is something that I think that I want to be part of. This is something that I think at the end of the day, if I'm going to spend the rest of my life doing something, I think this is what I want it to be. So I remember from that age all the way until, you know, what I am today, just constantly wanting to learn more and be part of more when it came to that side of the industry.
As you think back to your FFA experience, what milestones stand out as the most significant during your FFA career that you'll remember and that may be informed, you know, where you're deciding to go with your career?
One of the big things that we focused on, and, you know, at least for our program, was agroscience. It's fairly new to the FFA experience, but it's something that I think for me was a changing factor for my FFA experience. Agroscience is basically, to put it simply, is where a kid goes out and conducts a study, a scientific study related to the agricultural industry. And this can be on a multitude of levels, but mine always revolved around plant science. I conducted a couple different experiments, but they all revolved around soil fumigation and then its impact on nematodes and then Prunus replant disease. And with that first project there, I was actually able to climb the ranks, go all the way through state, and then actually I ended up winning nationals with that first project. And from there, I got to do another project the next year, and then I really lumped that all into a proficiency. And that too, I was able to really not only gain knowledge, but get some traction and make it all the way back up to nationals as a proficiency candidate for agroscience and win that too. So those really are my two biggest accomplishments that stick out to me.
And what do you feel like you learned about yourself through that process?
Well, I'll say this. When I first started in the program, I mean, I was 100% on ag and not very much on the leadership side of things and not very much on the speaking side of things. And I'll say through the experience, I've really noticed that I've actually come to enjoy not only speaking, but, you know, being able to go to different events and kind of teach the next generation or be able to mentor in some way. And I'll say when I was getting started, I really didn't see a want or, you know, I didn't see myself in that place of being that person.
And all right, so now that you're heading on to the next step, what is next for you? What are you doing next year? And how do you hope that leads to a career for you?
Yeah, so my full goal, since the minute I could think of, oh, I have to go and get a job when I get older, was I knew I wanted to do something in ag. You know, going back to riding around with my grandpa, you know, and going and looking at fields, that kind of thing. I really didn't know what that was, but I knew that it was something that I wanted to be part of. And really, you know, being around that, getting to learn more about the agricultural industry, I settled on the fact that I wanted to be a PCA. I wanted to be a pest control advisor. So that's really the next step. I'm going to go to College of the Sequoias here locally for a couple of years and then transfer over to Fresno State and major in plant science. And then those units from there will be able to give me the ability to get my PCA license, which that's a golden ticket you need to get in the industry.
And have you had any exposure or experience with the almond industry specifically?
Yeah, I actually, the freshman summer going into sophomore year, I started working for a guy that not only farms almonds, but he also runs a custom harvesting company. So he'll come in and do the full harvest front to back. And then he also has a farm management side of things. He'll come in for absentee owners and he'll do the full nine yards. I mean, he'll run the irrigation system. He'll keep everything maintained. He'll do all the mowing. He'll do all the pruning. And of course, he'll come in and do not only the harvest, but the winter sanitation part of things. So I started working for him freshman summer going into sophomore year. And just the basic stuff that first year, I mean, I was running around checking drip line, you know, going to the end there and doing the clean out for the drip line. I mean, I would paint trees. I would do, you know, anything under the sun. And then harvest season came around and he put me on a tractor with a blower on the back of it. And I would run around and blow ends. And really from there, I've been able to progress, you know, and gain more trust. And I've been able to really experience all ends of the process. And through that, I've learned, I mean, I can't even tell you all the things that I've learned that I didn't have going in. So that's really been my straight connection to the almond industry.
That's great. You know, maybe if you could just address the almond industry about, you know, the importance of these scholarships and what impact it has for you.
You know, the scholarships the Almond Board are providing, I mean, this is really a great opportunity for anybody that's looking to gain further education, you know, into the industry. I think one of the biggest things that we could probably all agree on is that the biggest thing we need today is more investment, and that's more investment in the people that are eventually going to go on to have jobs that correlate directly to the industry. That's more investment with, you know, really anything, but these scholarships are really allowing people to get their foot in the door and have the opportunity to go to school, get that higher learning, and really bring back more value than what's being put into them, into the actual industry.
Again, this was just a portion of the Almond Journey podcast with the 2023 ABC Scholarship recipients. You can listen to the entire podcast and other episodes by searching Almond Journey wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. Heat wave expected to expand. It doesn't look like we're going to get a break from the heat, as USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says. Heat that has led to record consecutive days of high temperatures in some areas is set to expand and cover much of the southern plains and in the west.
A record-setting heat wave. Phoenix, as of Monday, July 17th, reporting 18 consecutive days with high temperatures of 110 degrees or greater, and that ties the all-time station record for Phoenix that was set during a heat wave back in June of 1974. Looking ahead the next several days, there is a small push of cool air. It's not going to last very long. It'll knock back the heat in the northwest and across the northern and central Rockies, but by the time we get to this weekend, heat is going to resurge northward, and this time it'll reach the remainder of the Great Plains. So by the time we get to the weekend and beyond, we could see that triple-digit heat reaching as far north as Montana across the Great Plains. And then just about everything south and west of the Northern Plains will be very hot heading into the weekend.
In parts of California, there are excessive heat warnings, and they remain in effect through the weekend. And as a reminder, per California standards, heat illness prevention steps include having 1 quart of cool water per hour, available shade, and encouraged rest periods for all employees working outdoors. And Rippey goes on to share with us a 8 to 14 day national forecast.
Taking a look at the National Weather Service 8 to 14 day outlook, and that takes us right through the end of July from the 25th through the 31st. As we move toward the end of the month, it looks like heat will expand, and that means the entire country is expecting above normal temperatures. The greatest likelihood of significantly above normal temperatures will cover parts of the plains, upper Midwest, the western United States, and the deep south. Now, in terms of precipitation, rainfall from July 25th through the 31st, vast majority of the country expecting near or below normal rainfall during that 7-day period, exceptions likely to include parts of the desert southwest and the northeast.
There will soon be a new Deputy Secretary of Agriculture in office.
On this vote, the yeas are 79, the nays are 8. The motion is agreed to.
The U.S. Senate Monday confirming the nomination of New Mexico's Xochitl Torres Small to be the number 2 official at USDA. She has served the past 2 years as the Undersecretary for Rural Development, overseeing areas such as rural broadband expansion and climate-smart energy opportunities.
My own roots are both rural and urban, agricultural and international development, blue-collar and white-collar. And what I love about this department is that it brings all of those things together.
Undersecretary Torres Small at her Senate Agriculture Committee confirmation hearing in May. The incoming deputy secretary is scheduled to be sworn into office sometime next week at USDA headquarters. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
AEM study shows environmental benefits of precision agriculture. A new study for the Association of Equipment Manufacturers shows the environmental benefits of precision agriculture. The study examined the impact of various technologies on the production of row crops, broad acre crops, roots and tubers, as well as forage. The data overwhelmingly shows that precision agriculture can have a positive environmental impact in all of these areas. Precision agriculture leverages technologies to enhance sustainability through more efficient use of land, water, fuel, fertilizers, and pesticides. Essentially, farmers who use precision agriculture technologies use less to grow more, reducing both cost and environmental impact. In consultation with several environmental groups, AEM identified five areas with the most potential to impact the environment. Precision agriculture results in a 4% increase in crop production, 7% increase in fertilizer placement efficiency, and a 9% reduction in pesticide use, a 6% reduction in fossil fuel use, and a 4% reduction in water use. And AFB contributed to that report.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.